Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, November 22, 2021. Some Sudanese express mixed reaction over the reinstatement of Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok.
This agreement is regenerating the same dictatorship or the same military council that killed our brothers in the street.
And countries sharing the Nile River meet in the South Sudan capital, Juba, to discuss how to use the water.
One of which is the hydro-energy project. The other one is the groundwater project. So these are the major that pick a big part of the money from the donors.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok said Monday that maintaining economic gains from the past 2 years was among the reasons he has decided to return to his post under a deal with the military nearly a month after he was removed in a military takeover. In an interview with Reuters at his residence in Khartoum, where he had been held under house arrest following the October 25th military takeover, Hamdok said he believed a technocratic government would have a chance to improve living standards. Prominent political parties and Sudan's powerful protest movements have opposed Hamdok's decision to sign the agreement with the military on Sunday, with some saying it provided a political cover for the military. Hamdok said, quote, "We will continue with our contacts with international financial institutions, and the new budget that will begin in January will proceed on the path of economic reform and open the door to investment in Sudan," end of quote. He told Reuters his government is committed to the democratic path, freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and greater opening to the world. While in Sudan, residents of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, are expressing mixed reaction over Sunday's agreement between the military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, which returned Hamdok to his post nearly a month after the military takeover. Some citizens say Hamdok has betrayed the Sudanese revolutionaries, but others have welcomed the agreement, saying it will end the constitutional vacuum in the country and stop the protests. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The signing of the agreement coincided with an already planned protest by pro-democracy groups to condemn the killing of peaceful protesters in Khartoum last week. After hearing about the new agreement, protesters marched towards the presidential palace where the signing ceremony took place to voice their position to it. Security forces used tear gas to disperse protesters as they approached the presidential palace. Some Sudanese say they were shocked to hear that Hamdok agreed to return to his position as prime minister and continue the partnership with the army. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via a messaging application in Khartoum, artist and a political activist Osman Haider says he categorically rejects the agreement. He describes the deal as illegal, saying it violates the constitutional declaration that established the transitional government after the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. He says the Sudanese people are fed up with the 3 decades of military rule in the country.
This agreement is regenerating the same dictatorship or the same military council that killed our brothers in the street. We are not going to accept any appeasement. Our demands are very clear. Hold down the bloody military council, and we want to make the complete change in our country, not just changing faces with another faces.
Under the new agreement, Hamdok will lead a civilian government of technocrats during a transitional period until July 2023, followed by a national election. Sudanese political parties have rejected the deal, saying it violates the constitution and that any agreement with the military will not resolve the country's crisis. Khartoum resident Sahar al-Jazuli, a member of Abu Adam's resistance committee, also rejected the new political agreement. Al-Jazuli says she was surprised to hear that Hamdok has betrayed the Sudanese people by agreeing to work with the military leaders. Al-Jazuli says she had a mixed reactions last night, but despite this, she still have high hopes. We no longer trust the politicians, even if they try to justify their actions, she says. This is a game. We will continue to offer our sacrifice, and our objectives, demands, and ambitions will keep on growing day by day, Al-Jazuli says. But Khartoum resident Ammar Adam Said has a different opinion. Speaking via phone, Adam describes the deal as timely and prevents the country from slipping into a chaos. He says Sudan has suffered economic hardships for a long time, adding that he thinks Hamdok is capable of finding a solution to them soon. Adam says he thinks what happened between Hamdok and Al-Burhan is right. We are in a dire need of assistance. We need our economy to be restored, and we need our friends to help us realize these dreams. I am hopeful that our country will get stable soon and be developed, Adam says. The agreement allows the release of all political detainees who were arrested by the military following last month's dissolution of cabinet and suspension of some articles of the constitution. The Sudanese Sovereign Council announced on its official Facebook page last evening that four political detainees, including the deputy chairman of the SPLM North, Yasser Arman, were released. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The South Sudan government has welcomed Sunday's agreement that led to Abdullah Hamdok's reinstatement as prime minister nearly a month after the military dissolved the transitional government. South Sudan's deputy foreign minister says it is essential for Sudan to be at peace because South Sudan relies on Sudan's port for its export of crude oil. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
South Sudan's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister, Deng Dao Deng, says President Salva Kiir was among the first leaders who sent a delegation to Khartoum to help push for Sudan to return to calm. He says the Kiir administration welcomes the agreement because South Sudan considers Sudan a strategic neighbor. He says the agreement means a return to stability and a calm in Sudan.
If there are crises in Sudan, it can spill over, you know, to South Sudan, and therefore stability in Sudan is stability in South Sudan. In terms of economy, we have interest on the passage of the oil, you know, to Port Sudan, and this is a great thing to us as a country. On humanitarian front, South Sudan depend largely on the services that are coming from the north to the northern side of the border. You know, coming inside, we have refugees camp in Upper Nile and in Ruwen states, and they get service from Sudan.
Military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who led the October 25th coup, and Abdallah Hamdok signed the agreement Sunday. Under the deal, the military will release all civilian political leaders it had jailed last month, and Hamdok will lead a government of technocrats. They hailed al-Burhan for not suspending the Juba peace agreement, which brought armed opposition groups into the transitional government. He says he thinks yesterday's agreement boosts the Sudan's people's efforts to attain peace in their country. Deng also says Hamdok and al-Burhan should encourage other political leaders or forces to join the peace process. He calls on South Sudanese to learn from what happened in Sudan and avoid conflict.
I have to learn not to go to conflict. I have to learn not to, you know, not to take one-sided decisions like, you know, suspension of constitutions. One thing that we need to avoid is to keep our tempers down and to engage and build the consensus, and also look at the parameters of the constitution so that we, as people of South Sudan, we make our permanent constitution that will guide the people of South Sudan.
Deng says there are outstanding issues that Juba and Khartoum were supposed to address before last month's coup in Sudan. He says the border between South Sudan and Sudan was supposed to be opened so that traders continue to transport goods on the River Nile. He says the two countries had also agreed to revamp railway transport. Deng says South Sudan will continue to engage in a more open and transparent way with Sudan so as to have a better future with the country.
We will continue to deepen our bilateral relations so that we can continue to have a peaceful coexistence as neighbors, you know, not undermining ourselves, you know, and a letter of citizen benefit. We continue to discuss the post-independence, you know, cooperation agreement that has not yet been finalized. We have other issues like the unfinished situation in Abyei, and unless we have resolved it with Sudan, then that part of South Sudan will be able to be at peace. So we continue to have the engagement on issues of border, the border demarcation, so that the border between North and South, between South Sudan and Sudan, is properly demarcated.
Deng says the South Sudan government will wait for Sudan to form its government before officials resume talks on outstanding issues and reopening of the border crossing points. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is calling on African leaders to provide better governance for their people amid threats from violent extremism, rising authoritarianism, and increasing corruption across the continent. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has received a warm reception at each stop on his first tour of Africa, including from Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Blinken made clear that the Biden administration values Nigeria and the whole African continent as a major geopolitical player and a partner on the world stage. But he also waded into the sensitive issues such as reining in sometimes brutal security forces and respecting human rights.
Americans and Africans share a yearning to live in places where their rights are respected, their voices are heard, their governments answer to them and deliver for them. Working together, we can support democracy in our countries and around the world.
Last month, Nigerian youths held memorial protests in Lagos and Abuja, 1 year after security forces violently suppressed mass protests against police brutality and bad governance. Blinken's focus on governments delivering for their citizens was warmly welcomed by Michelle Gavin, Senior Fellow for African Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
We need to start thinking bigger. When the U.S. government talks about governance, it's not just the modalities of elections, really, but governing capacity, service delivery, right? Government that actually works for people. And when it doesn't, that can sort of be reprimanded at the ballot box and move in a new direction.
In a major speech on Africa policy, Blinken addressed the real competition between America and China on the continent, but said that was not his focus.
The United States doesn't want to limit your partnerships with other countries. We want to make your partnerships with us even stronger. We don't want to make you choose. We want to give you choices. Together, we can deliver real benefits to our people on the issues that matter most to them.
Blinken began the trip by reinforcing strong American ties with Kenya and joint efforts to reach a ceasefire to the fighting in Ethiopia. One expert argues that Africa should not be viewed simply through the prism of countering China's influence. Former U.S. Ambassador and former Assistant Secretary of State Johnny Carson spoke with VOA.
I think there is a fundamental difference between the policies being advanced by the Biden administration and the policies that were advanced by the last administration under Secretary Pompeo and former President Trump. The United States under the Biden administration values Africa as an important partner and on global issues ranging from climate change to human trafficking to strengthening our economic links. So it's an important relationship.
Blinken's last stop is Senegal, a predominantly Muslim democracy viewed by many as an island of stability in an increasingly insecure region. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Jonglei state officials say several people were killed in fresh fighting over the weekend. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Jonglei State Governor Denai Jok Chagor has directed security agencies in Bor Town to trace and apprehend suspects behind the killings of seven traders from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area who own businesses in Bor Town. The chief administrator for the Great Pibor Administrative Area has welcomed Governor Chagor's decision. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Governor Denai Jok Chagor said he was shocked by what he described as a, quote, inhuman, brutal and cowardly act. He directed all security agencies in Bor Town, including the army, the police and the National Security Service, to quickly track down any suspects behind the killings.
Youths from Bor County organized themselves and went into a rampage, killing innocent people that reside here in Bor Town. We're here as the government of Jonglei State condemning it. And as we speak right now, as governor of Jonglei State, I have given all the orders to all our security organ to bring those who are involved in killing innocent people who are living in Bor Town, living with us. These are our brothers and sisters. They should not be killed because of some criminals that comes and kill people.
Denai says the attackers killed seven unarmed people from Pibor who are residents of Bor Town. Chagor says that same day, at least two men from Bor riding a motorcycle were ambushed and murdered in Anyidi Payam. The killers are suspected of being from Pibor Administrative Area. Chagor sent condolences to the families of the deceased, promising swift punishment of those who involved in the murders of their loved ones.
Anybody who is suspected, anybody who have given communication, anybody who have said something about this, whether they're a politician, they're young, they're old, anybody who's involved must be brought to justice. And we are doing it swiftly. We are not making any compromise. This is something that should not repeat it itself. It happened before, and these people who thought that they can do it again, they will know that they cannot do it again.
Chagor says he is committed to implementing a recent agreement signed between the communities in Jonglei and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. However, Chagor urges the authorities in Pibor to make sure revenge killings don't take place in the area and to investigate and apprehend those who killed two people in Bor County on Friday. Lokalia Mayor, the chief administrator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, welcomes Chagor's push to trace and arrest the suspects of Friday's killings. Amaya says while he is disappointed by the recent incident in Bor Town, he is still committed to peace.
What happened in Bor, it happened three times now before 2007. They killed people in hospital, like that in the town. And again, there were traitors, 2012 was it? Yeah, 12, and 11, 12, they killed two traitors there. And then again, now it happened in the town, all the way like that. But what I see, seeing is not that right. And we have to commit ourselves for the peace, especially the place where the government, we cannot use, they cannot do that.
Amaya says he is putting in place security measures to ensure no revenge attack occurs in the Pibor area.
I control it. They cannot do revenge in Pibor, in Kumurug, Kwangule, in all my order, all my counties. It should not used to be happen. Now in my area, in the one is the chief of MI, the one from Jongule, from close to Nyeri, that what we call Makwach, is from Makwach. the corner of the MI now in Greater Bijbor.
Ameya, Chagur and other officials met in Bor recently, where they reiterated their commitment to an agreement that aims to foster peace and security among their communities. The agreement includes improving working relations and implementing resolutions such as the return of abductees and compensation to family members of those who have been killed. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
Ten ministers from the Nile Basin region are meeting in the South Sudan capital, Juba, to discuss best practices in using the Nile waters and development projects such as hydropower and groundwater. The delegates are also expected to discuss the effects of climate change and cooperation among Nile Basin countries. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
This is the second time South Sudan is hosting and leading the Nile Basin Initiative Council of Ministers. It first ran the regional water governing body in 2013. Emmanuel Lado Parmenas, Undersecretary in South Sudan's Water Resources and Irrigation Ministry, made the announcement alongside Sylvester Matemo, Executive Director for the Nile Basin Initiative.
We are 10 member countries in the Nile Basin Initiative, and the meetings normally rotate from one country to the other, and the rotation goes in according to the alphabetical order. So currently the chairmanship is in Rwanda, as I said. The next one, when the meeting takes place in South Sudan, the chairmanship will be now in the hands of the Republic of South Sudan.
Parmenas says the meetings in Juba will focus on best practices in using the Nile waters and developmental projects in the areas of hydropower, groundwater, climate change, and cooperation among the Nile Basin countries. Matemo notes the Council of Ministers is the highest decision-making body of the Nile Basin Initiative. Meetings are held once in a year in the host country. He says NBI member states make decisions about shared water use, ways to protect the environment, and issues regarding climate change.
To be the chair of the council is a credibility for the country. Not to go for quantity. There are those that are not quantitative, like to become the chair of Council of Ministers, where you can do a lot of things in terms of decision on behalf of the others. That is a credibility. It's not an easy.
This year, the leadership of the NBI has 5 days of engagements in Juba beginning today. Matemo says technical meetings involving 20 technical representatives from the 10 NBI countries and development partners will take place in the 4 days ahead of the Council of Ministers meeting. Matemo says the Council of Ministers is expected to discuss governance issues of the NBI as well as key projects aimed at strengthening socio-economic development in the region.
One of which is the hydro-energy project. The other one is the groundwater project. So these are the major that pick a big part of the money from the donors. The others are the policy issues, country engagement, to engage with the countries, to discuss with the capitals, to streamline issues, to get the feeling of the countries on how we should coordinate matters.
Hydromet is an NBI project initiated in 2019 with an aim of addressing challenges of data scarcity on water management in the NBI region. The NBI was created in 1999 to coordinate and govern issues of water management of the River Nile to try to ensure equitable usage of the Nile waters among the sharing countries. A long-running dispute between Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia over a massive hydroelectric dam being built by Ethiopia remains a contentious issue. Egypt and Sudan have both argued that Ethiopia has acted unilaterally for a second year when it began filling up the reservoir behind the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam earlier this year. At least 270 million people across the region depend on the River Nile's water for economic development. Each member state of the NBI pays annual fees of at least $500,000. South Sudan has struggled to clear years of unpaid fees to the body. Parmenas did not say how much South Sudan is in arrears, but told the reporters efforts are underway to clear the money. Juba owes the NBI.
Our arrears is still there. This is attributed to the fact that currently we're implementing an austerity budget, but I am hopeful that within the coming financial year, we might probably be able to address part of this outstanding arrears.
Parmenas says the South Sudan Minister of Water Resources and Irrigation had presented a concept note to the country's governance and economic clusters in efforts to clear the arrears. He says the two clusters have approved the concept note and it now awaits the blessings of the Council of Ministers. In 2019, South Sudan lost the opportunity to appoint the NBI Executive Director following its failure to pay its debt. NBI member states include Sudan, Ethiopia, Uganda, Egypt, Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, the DR Congo, and South Sudan. Eritrea is a member but as an observer only. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Hwangala Boys and the song Kisumu. We have been listening to Ohangala Boys and the song Kisumu. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for joining us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
I'm gonna say